Jack felt the vibrations of the airfoils as they were launched, even before the sound of their engines reached him or their silver fuselages were caught by the moon. He kept moving, but spared a glance back. Ryan and JB flanked the armored wag, watching. Mildred and Doc were in front. Jack quickly turned back to face front as he ran. He spotted the silver bodies now, saw the payload beneath each of the three machines. It had to be a bomb of some kind, and he was running right into their path. He looked around him, reading the contours of the land. Each of the machines dropped its load simultaneously. One was headed straight for him. The others toward his companions. Jack threw himself to the side, following a new path between the mines. As the payload landed, Jack realized that the mines had been disabled. He could use this to his advantage. But what was in those bombs? Even as the question crossed his mind, he realized that it was gas of some kind, as a vaporous white mist trailed across the land. It picked up what little light there was, and looked like spun silk and strands, entangling the very air around him. It seemed to enfold him, even as he tried to move out of the way. He tried to hold his breath, but he knew this was useless. Most of the gas could be absorbed through skin anyway, but it was a reflex action. The gas made his eyes sting and water. He rubbed at them involuntarily, knowing, even as he did, that it would only make things worse. His lungs were filled with a stinging, cloying grip. He'd lost sense of direction. He could keep going forward, but he didn't know what forward was anymore. There was some cleaner air near to the ground, and he sucked it in as much as he dared, risking opening his eyes wide to try to see where he was, and even which way he was facing. He could see the wag in the distance, so he turned around somehow. Jack began to run back toward the others. His legs were unsteady at first, his breath coming short. But after a few steps, he regained his footing and started to move with assurance. Even the gas still in the air around him was less of a concern than before. His lungs and eyes were so full of the gas, every rasping breath like a razor, every blink like needles, that it couldn't get any worse. He could adjust easily once he knew this. As he drew near to the area around the wag, he ran into a cloud that was still dissipating. Jack had made it back, but all the companions were in no shape to discuss what had just happened. Jack helped Ryan to his feet, then tapped JB on the shoulder, indicating with signs alone that they should grab Mildred and Doc and get back behind the sandbank in which the wag had embedded itself. Ryan and JB, still unsteady on their feet but able to move with comparative ease, moved jerkily to where Doc and Mildred were prone. JB took Mildred and helped her up. She was stronger than Doc, less affected, and was able to respond. She scrambled up and allowed herself to be blindly led by the armorer, who wasn't seeing too well himself.
Doc! Take my hand!
I cannot take that which I cannot see!
Ryan fumbled through the clearing air with a single bloodshot eye and finally found Doc.
Come here! Behind the wag!
Doc's eyes rolled back in his head, tears streaking his cheeks. Streaks formed in the dust from the sandy soil in which he had buried his face, seeking relief. His feet pawed ineffectually at the ground for a moment before he found some kind of purchase and started to half-run, half-stumble as both Jack and Ryan pulled him away from the worst of the lingering cloud. They clawed their way up the sandbank thrown up around the wag, following the trail made by JB and Mildred. They could only see in vague shape and form, pale light and deep shadow in the gray light.
Almost.
They all lay on the other side of the bank for some time in the silence of the night, trying to get back the strength to stand without feeling as though they would immediately tumble back to the ground. To each of them except Doc, who was still too incapacitated by the gas to do anything except think about the next breath, it occurred that they had learned little from the exercise, and if anything, were worse off than before. The maneuver had done nothing to draw out any personnel from the redoubt. The only purpose it had served was to show them that the redoubt had aerial capabilities as well as land, and that it had more than one type of gas. But Jack knew something else that he hadn't been able as of yet to speak of. He knew that the mines had been deactivated before the non-lethal gas had been sent. The men in the redoubt wanted them alive. Jack tried to speak, but he couldn't quite manage it yet. But there was someone who could.
Well, that was a real smart move, guys. Yeah, when in doubt, make sure that the bastards can whomp the shit out of you. Amazing to me that you've managed to survive this long.
Jack lifted his head, could see that Ryan was doing the same. JB and Mildred were already on their knees,
hands halfway to their guns, but stilled as though frozen. When Jack followed the direction of their gaze, he could see why. A tall, slim black man, his eyes obscured by goggles with opaque lenses swimming with color, stood about 50 yards away. His afro was contained by a polished steel headband that even in the pale light of the moon seemed to glow. Most importantly, he was holding a white weapon, made of some kind of plastic, the like of which Jack had not seen before. It was pointed down at the ground, but the way in which he held himself suggested that it would take less than a blink of an eye for it to be raised and fired.
Where the hell did you come from?
Well, here and there. Doesn't do to let mundanes know too much about what you're doing, where you've come from.
So you come in response to our call?
Give the sister a prize. Yeah, I got the beacon. Won't be the only one. Guess I'm just the first one here. Thing is, though, I'm wondering why you've triggered the rail ghost beacon when he's long since become a ghost for real. Especially when the woman he gave it to isn't here with you.
Could it possibly be that that is the reason why we use the beacon? If you think about it logically, assuming you can, we call on you for help, and the first thing you do is hold us at gunpoint. What in the name of the three Kennedys gives you the right to answer a call of distress with such outright hostility?
The man paused for a moment. It was almost impossible to read what was going through his mind, the goggles disguising whatever he may be thinking. The white plastic weapon twitched in his hands, as though he thought about raising it and just eliminating the problem. As one, the four friends who were still prone or semi-prone stiffened, poised to go for their own weapons. Chances were that he could maybe take down one of them, but even as he did, the other three would send him into oblivion. It wasn't supposed to go this way.
Well?
Okay. Why don't you run it by me?
Yeah. There's a man on a motorcycle going from ville to ville, blowing them all to shit. We went out to find him. He found us first, took Christy, and left us for dead. We tracked him down to this area.
What makes you think he's around here?
Mines, missiles, gas, probably more.
Whoever this guy is, he's holed up with Christy, and has a hell of a lot of tech.
Yeah, there have been stories lately about some guy on a killer bike. Word gets around. Especially when it's someone with something unusual that we haven't heard of before.
So the rider isn't known to you then?
Nope. Thing is, though, none of us knows everything about everyone else. That's just the way we like it. But I don't reckon that this guy knows any of us. With the word that's been buzzing, if someone knew who he was, then it would have gotten around.
So what you're saying is that you know even less than we do. And yet, you've got the balls to call us ignoramuses.
I didn't get my lungs full of tear gas.
Yeah, but your mouth's still full of shit.
The man whirled to where the new voice had originated. The friends had watched her approach on a bike that seemed to glide across the sands, and had figured that she was with the black man.
Ah, shit, Rounder. You should have let me know you were here. No, scratch that. You haven't got the manners.
Manners my ass.
The woman dismounted the bike. It seemed to be of a light aluminum construction, with storage pods and a small, motor-like propulsion unit. She seemed too heavy for the bike, but it bore her weight well. She was fat, but not in a flabby way. Her camo clothing hung loosely on her, but they could still see that she carried too much weight for her frame. Despite that, she was solid, and there was a hardness about her face as she fixed the black man with a stare that told him not to mess with her.
I knew we should have taken that fuck-ass alarm from the bitch last time we saw her. Ugh, nice girl, but got trouble written all over her. I hate trouble. Especially when it means I have to work with you and that hard bitch Brianna. Bet she ain't too far away if you're here.
I ain't gonna...
And of course, I bet you haven't thought to check if we're out of range of any intel that Laughing Boy and crew may have trained on us? Thought not. Never mind these guys. How the fuck are you still alive?
Howard hunched over the monitor board, his shoulders tight with tension, so much so that the strained muscles were visible to Christy through the material of his uniform. His hands, as they rested on the console, were almost white, drained of blood as he gripped so hard, trying to control his temper. One thing was for sure, Christy wanted to get as much space between them as possible. And yet, as he whirled toward her, and she tensed for the explosion of anger, preparing to defend herself if necessary, it was not with the wild glare of fury that she had expected. Instead, his eyes were almost like those of a child, confused, hurt, and uncomprehending.
What just happened?
You launched a defensive move, and it seems to have worked.
A small smile flickered across his face. It flittered with barely time to register, before it was replaced with a look of apprehension.
Yes. Yes, yes, that's it. That's what I was doing. And it did work, I think. Sid, Hamill, status reports.
Visual contact still not possible. Thermal imaging suggests that the subjects have retreated out of range. Audio backs up this supposition. There is nothing that the long-distance mics can pick up.
Systems back up initial reports. You've driven them back, Howard, but beyond the range of land reconnaissance. With the current wind speed and direction, it will be 5.3 minutes until the gas clouds clear sufficiently for visual contact to be resumed.
So what am I supposed to do in the meantime?
There isn't anything anybody can do.
But there should be!
Why? You can't control the weather conditions out there. You opted to use a non-offensive gas, and it takes time to clear. All the sex systems tell you that they've retreated, so that's okay, isn't it?
Christy stepped forward, tentatively put out a hand, and stroked his arm. Howard looked down at her hand in wonder, and a look of happiness spread across his features that was almost as childlike as the peevishness of a few moments earlier.
I suppose so. It's just that in the old videos, there's never any problems like this. The gas would have cleared much more quickly. And that's what it's always like, you see? It's never like the old videos, and I sometimes wonder if this is a world where I can fit. If this is what my mission is all about, or if I'm a man who is out of time.
Times have changed, and this is a different world than before Skydark. Maybe that's why things don't behave as they used to. But people are the same. People don't change. Not fundamentally.
No, you're right.
Over his shoulder, Christy could see that the monitors were clearing.
Look, you can see the WAG now. There's no corpses. It worked.
Yes, but there's nobody in the monitor at all. Damn! They must have gone on the far side of the dune. I'll have to use the spy cams.